to be American.
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
Welcome to Democracy Optimist, where we bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly on voting rights and election law with a dose of hope sprinkled in. Today, we are thrilled to speak with Richard Young, who is the executive director of Civic Lex, an organization in Lexington, Kentucky, that is focused on civic engagement and community development. Full disclosure, I'm on the board of Civic Lex, but that's because I'm passionate about its mission. Richard, welcome to Democracy Optimist. So you started Civic Lex in 2017. It's been 6 years now. Tell us about the organization, what prompted you to start it, and what it does.
Yeah, so Civic Lex is a interesting organization. We haven't found too many others out there in the country like us. You know, we originally started around trying to find ways to get people more engaged with local government. So we started by covering city meetings, much like local news organizations do, really focusing on the sort of smaller committee meetings and subcommittee meetings that just don't get the kind of attention that they should. And then we also, you know, hosted these sort of in-person events that would bring together elected officials, city staff, and the public to really meet each other in physical space. Because, you know, one of the things that we know is that relationships with people inside city government just make it a lot easier for people to get engaged. It makes it less intimidating, makes it so that you can call someone if you know them personally. And so that's sort of how we started and what our focus was. And over time, over that 6 years, we had a series of realizations, I think, that sort of caused us to shift our scope a little bit. So the first one was that getting people more informed and engaged about what's happening in their community is important, but it can also backfire on you. I remember a very specific instance where I was talking with someone who came to one of our we had workshops on the city budget, sort of help people understand what the budget is, you know, how it gets created. And I remember a very specific instance of someone coming and joining us for one of our workshops, getting sort of inspired and excited about getting involved in the sort of creation of this important public document. And they, you know, went to some city hall meetings and found that that process for engaging didn't meet up to what their expectations were, right? They showed up and the opportunity to actually speak on the budget took place after the vote on the budget had already happened.
Well, that's not really helpful.
It's not
right?
Particularly helpful.
So let me back up first for a second to ask, why should people care about local government and local elections? I mean, we hear so much news, the media focuses on the presidential election. You're focused on, you know, the nitty-gritty ground level, what's happening in one city. Why does it affect people's lives and why should we care?
That's such a great question. And I think, you know, there's so much harm that has come from, I feel like, this sort of nationalization of politics. I'm sure we can go into. But, you know, local government is the level that affects people's lives the most directly, right? It helps shape what the neighborhoods you live in look like. It helps shape the roads that you drive on. It helps shape what kind of businesses you can go to. These decisions, and, you know, part of this is in the design of America, the American system of government and the concept of federalism. But local government and local decision-making is inherently the most directly impactful. It's also the level at which people have the least amount of information. Studies nationally show us it's the level at which people are the most optimistic about actually getting engaged doing something. There's a pretty significant difference when you look at studies from Gallup and others. And it's the level at which one person can actually make a pretty significant difference, right? One person showing up to a committee meeting or showing up to a council meeting and presenting a perspective that may not have originally been considered can actually change things. And so it's the most impactful. It's the level that's closest to you. It's the level which people have the most hope and haven't gotten jaded on like they have on national politics. And it's the level that it's the easiest to impact. And so those four things sort of in combination with each other really show us that it's the level at which we really need to be getting people more engaged to try and build this virtuous cycle of engagement.
Yeah, and of course, I love that ideal of optimism about what's possible. I mean, I named this entire show Democracy Optimist because to me, you know, with all the doom and gloom out there, one solution or response is to throw up our hands in despair and think you can't change the system. Your organization is proving that you can change the system, even at the local level and perhaps in the areas that affect people's everyday lives the most. So one thing I wanted to talk about is I love your events that engage the community because you've somehow found the magic way of bringing people together from opposing viewpoints, people who are, you know, think so differently from one another about the direction of the country, about policy issues, and you get them talking in a way that I think is really unique and is a model that we should think about for how we talk to each other in general and certainly how our national politics should operate. So how have you done that? What's the method for getting people to engage with one another, especially when they are opposing each other?
That's a great question. You know, I think that a lot of people, when they think about politics, immediately go to our points of disagreement, right? These are these loud, flashy issues that are important, don't get me wrong. But there are so many other areas and opportunities where we can have more productive conversations. And working at the local level really highlights those, right? People don't get as animated about, you know, snowplow plans as they do about, you know, really high profile national issues. And so if we want to find opportunities for people to come together and meet people that are different from each other, from themselves, we have to do it around issues where people are actually open to dialogue. And so that's the first thing, right? And the local level presents us with a lot of those. The second thing that we, you know, really focus on in these sorts of events is making it so that dialogue isn't necessarily the sole focus of the event, right? Like there is a particular group of people, I count myself amongst them, that are particularly nerdy that like are like, yeah, I want to come and like talk with someone that thinks differently than me. Like that's a small group of people. But if we can make these events something that's a little more social, a little more appealing, and then have dialogue with, you know, with folks from different perspectives and different backgrounds and different experiences be part of it, but not the sole focus, it can be really impactful, right? So, you know, I'll give you a couple of examples. So we hosted an event in the fall of last year that focused on how our city builds parks, which sounds, you know, like something that may be kind of boring, but there's actually a lot of really interesting history there that ranges from, you know, issues around segregation, right? Because Lexington, like every other American city, had segregated parks up until not that long ago, right? In my parents' lifetime. And policies around taxation and policies around all of these different things, right? Go into this important topic. And parks are something that people care about a lot. And so we wanted to have an event where we could bring folks together to talk about the various issues around the history of parks in Lexington. And so instead of, you know, saying, all right, we're going to come meet someone from across the aisle and talk about the history of segregation in parks, which doesn't necessarily sound appealing to everyone, we made it about crafting, right? We made it about building building little birdhouses and building different things that you could put in your parks, but then had opportunities to have these conversations with someone that might have a completely different set of experiences than you. And importantly, for us and our work, we also make sure that decision makers, right, folks from city council, folks from the city's parks and rec department, from planning, from the bodies that set policy for these issues, they're in the room, right? And they're engaging with people. They're not in the room in like an authoritative way or like, you know, we're going to present to you about this issue. They're right there building birdhouses out of, you know, sort of little wicker baskets right alongside you. And so you get a chance to connect, you know, if you're an everyday resident showing up, you get a chance to connect with an elected official or city staff. But if you're on the city staff side of things, you get a chance to hear from people in a different way than sort of getting yelled at in a gymnasium, which is, I feel like, what most city government folks feel like the process of engagement is.
Yeah. You know, and what's amazing to me is that it's almost the purest form of democracy, right? It's citizens getting out to their community and interacting in a meaningful way with their elected officials, getting to see what these people are really like when they're not, you know, trying to ask for your vote or trying to convince you of whatever pet project they're trying to enact. So how do we emulate that across the country? How do we take this model and really fix our politics through what's happening at Civic Lex and in Lexington?
You know, I think it's going to take a lot of individuals in organizations in communities insisting that this civic life at the local level is what's important, right? You know, no national organizations are going to come in and fix this across the country because these issues are just so granular and so dependent on our everyday lives and in the sort of context of our communities. So it's really going to take people looking at our civic life nationally and saying, I think we can do better, and I think I can do better in my community, and looking for ways to do that. We have tons of resources on our website that people are welcome to steal and use in their own communities. Everything we do is in the Creative Commons, so we have no copyright on it. And, you know,
that's civiclex.org,
civiclex.org,
by the way.
Civiclex.org, exactly. And, you know, something we always, you know, ask people to do is just directly reach out to us. You know, we are more than willing to talk with folks about how we do our work and the sort of process and share resources to help other people build something similar in their communities. Because ultimately, that's really what it's going to take, right? We're such a big and spread out country. It is going to take people understanding that there is a better way of existing with our neighbors and our communities and insisting upon that in their own places.
So I heard another interview you gave in which you talked about the power of a direct phone call or direct text to your acquaintances, your friends, your family members to provide accurate factual information. Why is that powerful, and how does someone go about doing that? I mean, you know, we're trying to think about a tangible thing we can take away. This seems something like, okay, I could text my friend something. Why do that, and how to do it?
You know, I think these days there's so much information out there, right, on the internet, through social media. You know, we're constantly bombarded with information. There's a really interesting study that the Knight Foundation did a couple years ago about one of the sort of findings was that the sheer amount of information made it much more challenging for people to feel informed, which is really interesting, right? There's sort of a contradiction in that. But I think all of us have had an experience. We've been at the grocery store and we're like looking at 15 different brands of something and you're like, I don't know which box mac and cheese to get. But if we have a friend, someone that's or a family member, someone that we really trust, say, you know, I really like this particular one, we're more likely to choose that. And so one of the things that I like to, you know, tell people is that that individual trust that you have with people, that is the sort of essential connective tissue of our civic life, right? People are inherently much more likely to listen to you if they're related to you or if you have a pre-existing relationship or friendship. And so it's really important to be that sort of steward of good information for your community. And one of the things that I learned very early on in doing this work was a dear friend of mine said, you know, no matter what you're doing, when you're working in community, the thing you need to ask yourself after every sentence, after every thought is that true? And for all of us, that's not necessarily a go-to thing that we think of all the time to immediately think, can I verify this? And so I think it's absolutely critical for folks to have those moments of reflection and then be stewards of good information because those relationships and that trust is so important.
Yeah, and of course, we got to be careful not to share falsehoods, right? So
exactly.
Ask yourself that, is this shareable because I can verify it's true before sharing it? All right, as we finish up our conversation, let me ask you this. Are you optimistic about voting in elections coming into the 2024 election season? You know, we hear so much doom and gloom. Are you optimistic or not?
I am optimistic. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I think this is going to be a rough election year, you know, nationally. But I think everywhere I look around the country, you know, because of my work with CivicLex, I have a really interesting vantage point on folks doing work in communities across the country, trying to strengthen the sort of civic health of their communities. And there are so many people doing so much excellent work from, you know, bringing people together across difference, to finding opportunities to, you know, get residents more engaged in the sort of local news process, to, you know, opportunities to really connect folks in a way that they've never really been connected before. There are organizations that are seeing that as essential to what they do and as essential to the strength of their communities. And so I think what we have to have is faith in our civic life and faith in each other.
So let me follow up with that to ask, what's one thing that listeners can do to support civic engagement in democracy? One tangible thing that listeners can take away from our conversation that they can do?
If I were to suggest the first thing for folks to getting more engaged in civic life and trying to strengthen the civic health of their communities is learn who their local elected officials are and reach out to them. Elected officials, especially at the local level, council members, mayors, and folks down the ballot in county races, they are used to hearing from people in moments of crisis, right? That is when they typically hear from the public. And what I would recommend to folks is reach out and say, hey, I want to thank you for your service, because being an elected official is a civic service. It's a civic duty. It's hard. And I want to know what I can do to help strengthen my community. And I think people will be very surprised by the result they get. Knowing who your elected officials are and actively working to strengthen civic health in your own community is something that everyone can do in small ways and in really big ways.
I love that, because it's about let me help you. And then when you need the help from them, you know, they'll know who you are. So that's, I think, a really positive thing to think about, the power of local democracy. Richard, this was such a great conversation. Richard Young, the executive director of CivicLex, thank you so much for being on Democracy Optimist.
Thank you so much for having me.
Josh, that was an interesting reminder by Richard Young how truly important it is that we train our focus on taking care of things on the local level. And with that in mind, if you had to single out an important election law that everybody needs to know about, what would that be?
So civic education is so important to democracy, and it goes hand in hand with election law and voting rights. So today I wanted to highlight our own state of Kentucky and the new Kentucky Civics Seal. This program will recognize students at all grade levels, K through 12, who show, quote, exceptional civic performance regarding local, state, and national governance. They'll get a recognition at graduation and a special seal on their diploma. And this year, 10 high schools in Kentucky are piloting the program. What's really interesting about this is that it doesn't require students to memorize the Declaration of Independence or the preamble to the Constitution. You know, that stuff is important, but it's kind of boring to most people. I mean, I love it, right? I teach election law and constitutional law, so I think that stuff is great. But, you know, high school students don't want additional memorization. Instead, the Kentucky Civic Seal program uses best practices of civics education to engage students to solve real-world problems through tangible projects. You know, we see some states doing things like, oh, we're going to fix civics education, so we're going to have a high school requirement be you've got to pass the same citizenship test that new citizens have to pass. That's rote memorization. Here, we're focused on tangible real-world projects that can actually change things.
That's really great. I feel like we've drifted away from that kind of education that supports civic engagement. And it's so, so important, as we're finding out in this election year.
Yeah. And, you know, for my first book in 2019, a book called Vote for Us, I have a chapter on civics education. And one of my favorite stories from that chapter comes from Washington, D.C., where this high school social studies teacher decided to engage his students in an action civics project. And without, you know, revealing all the details of what happened, this classroom went to the D.C. City Council and convinced them to let kids ride free on the buses and the metro. And it, you know, improved transportation and reduced tardiness in the school as a result. That's a great example of actually engaging students in demonstrating the power of local government and the power of their voices.
All right. There are a lot of conversations going on right now in this election season, and it's always good when you're in one of those to have this juicy piece of information that you can wow your friends and family with. So if you would give us a fun election fact.
So, you know, we all love receiving the I voted sticker after we vote. But during the American Revolution, we didn't have I voted stickers. Instead, there was election cakes. So people usually
like that better.
It sounds great, right? It kind of reminds me of Australia, where they have democracy sizzles for the democracy sausage that people have. It's a big party at the polls. And so people go vote and they have their democracy sausage in Australia. We sort of had something similar to that with election cake. So People, usually women, of course, who were not able to vote then, but they would go to the polls and bring their election cakes to give to voters. The first recipe for an American election cake appears in 1796 in the first U.S. cookbook, Amelia Simmons's American Cookery. So, you know, I'll be busy on election day, but I'm hopeful to also whip up some election cake because it sounds like a great tradition that we should bring back.
Do we know what flavor that cake was by any chance?
So I looked up the recipe, actually, and it was kind of bland. I'm a big chocolate fan. There was no chocolate in it. It was kind of like a vanilla pound cake. But I think you can, you know, have your own variations, I'm sure.
Why don't we put that recipe on our website?
That sounds like a great idea.
So,
and if anyone wants to make it for us,
I'm always
welcome to take some cake.
What one thing, Josh, one thing can we do to support democracy?
You know, one of the points of the Democracy Optimist show is to give individuals tangible action items to feel like we all can make a change in sustaining our democracy in a positive way. You know, Richard Young talked about this. If you see a family member or a friend spreading election lies, foundering for the truth, reach out directly with the facts. You know, a gentle phone call, a gentle text can make a world of difference. You know, let's not spread misinformation. Let's have a skeptical eye. You know, is this AI that is, you know, that is peddling these falsehoods? You know, what is the truth? Let's go to respected sources and, you know, send a link to someone and say, hey, I thought this was interesting. I saw you talking about this issue on social media. I thought you might be also interested in this topic or this take on things. So look for verifiable information and spread it with your network.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.